You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line today is Matthew Heimbach of the Traditionalist Youth Network and the newly formed Traditionalist Worker Party. Matt, welcome, sir. How are you today?
Good, John. How are you doing?
Doing just fine. Thank you very much for taking the time to join me today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Now, you've been involved in nationalist and identity politics for quite some time now at a relatively young age, and you're widely known for founding the White Student Union at Towson University when you were a student there, and this is a topic that American Free Press has covered in the past. So can you just give our listeners a brief outline of your involvement in the nationalist movement?
Sure. Well, I got my start with Youth for Western Civilization, which was a pro, obviously, Western Civilization group, not explicitly racial. But I experienced that first year on campus when we had our YWC chapter, the amount of anti-white hate, anti-Christian feelings on campus, that if you stood up for values that would be considered sane and normal, even a generation ago, you were ostracized. The social justice warriors and the far left would come out against you. So that's why my senior year, I decided with our YWC chapter that white students needed to explicitly organize as white students, because there were over two dozen multicultural groups for every other ethnicity, but white students didn't have a voice. We didn't have an organization to be able to support our culture, our identity, to organize, to be able to advocate for our best interests as white students on campus. So we formed the White Student Union, and of course the world exploded, basically, where it was viewed across the country and worldwide that it was supposedly so radical that white students wanted to be able to stand up for themselves and weren't cowed by white guilt, and that they were willing to take the plunge and say, I'm proud to be white, and my culture is worth protecting, preserving, and advancing. So that kind of got me my entry into nationalist politics. And when I graduated, we took the Towson White Student Union and merged it with the Traditionalist Youth Network, which was a project that Matthew Parrott, Thomas Bowles, and some other really great organizers had put together to be a true youth movement for nationalist and traditionalist politics. And from there, we've been doing that. We've been very successful doing everything from protesting anti-racist speakers, which is another code word for anti-white speakers, like Tim Wise, across the country when they are brought in to preach white guilt to students. We've done lots of different events on college campuses to raise awareness about issues. And we've started a monthly book club to be able to also promote education. So we're an activist group, an educational group, and it's been very successful. And now it's time to take it to the next level. And that's where we formed the Traditionalist Worker Party, to be able to be a political party that will actually fight for the best interests of white working and middle class families. Because right now, both political establishment parties don't care about us, betray us on a regular basis. And it's time for us to have a voice of our own.
Very good. Yes. And we will be talking much more about the Traditionalist Worker Party in just a moment. But briefly, could you address why identity and nationalism are such important concepts in an increasingly diverse and multicultural America?
Sure. Well, if you'll even look back 50 years, we were a biracial society. We were overwhelmingly white, with a black minority. Each people had a distinct culture and had control over their own spaces. But now we see with multiculturalism that there is no dominant American culture anymore. There isn't even a dominant American language. You can go to some parts of major American cities and all the businesses, all the radio stations, everything isn't even in English at all, and it's in a foreign tongue where someone can be born, live, and die in a region almost never hearing English, because they're not part of this greater American experience that would be common sense and was everywhere even 50 years ago. So the issue we see today is that every ethnic group has organized for its own best interests. Identity politics is not a question, it's just a reality. But whites, due to what I feel is white guilt, and also not really being willing to take the plunge and fight for ourselves have allowed ourselves to not organize. So every other group, you know, you can have a mob or you can have a disciplined fighting force, and it doesn't matter how big the mob is, the disciplined fighting force will always prevail. Anyone who's seen the movie Zulu knows that. and that's kind of where it's at now, where we're whites. If we don't stand up for ourselves as we're moving towards being minorities in the United States and around the Western world, we need to advocate for ourselves. But it's nothing radical. You know, the idea of having an identity and then manifesting it through nationalist politics, it's not radical. Literally every other group does it. The Jews do it. The blacks do it. The Hispanics do it. The Asians do it. Everybody does it except for us. So that's why it's time to finally get in the game, because right now we're just letting the other teams score points. And it's time to be able to lace up our shoes, get on the field, and start playing, because identity politics is here to stay.
Right. It's time to start competing. That's right. Now, could you talk about the founding and formation of the Traditionalist Worker Party, and could you clarify your specific role in this political party?
Sure. Well, I am the chairman of the party, which means I am a I'm the leader, but I'm also a glorified tiebreaker for our board of directors on different issues. And the foundation of the party came about because, you know, I've been involved in nationalist politics for several years. You know, some people like, you know, my father-in-law, Matt Parrott, has been a white advocate for over a decade. Some of the people we're involved with have been doing it since before I was alive. And the problem is there hasn't been a real pro-white political party in the style of the European parties, where it's not just about parliamentary politics. It's about creating that subculture where the party is the manifestation of the will of the communities they represent. And that's very different from an American perspective, but that's the way the Europeans do it, where, you know, you've got nationalist party bars, you've got nationalist party clothing lines, you've got nationalist party music labels, and, you know, everything kind of comes together under the umbrella of the party, where you can have multiple different organizations separately that all kind of come together, like the old Scottish clans would when they had to be able to stand and fight together against common enemies. And you have that umbrella to be able to call people together. And there's just been this vacuum, this lack in the American nationalist scene for a long time, where we've got literally tens of thousands of active members of different organizations. That's not even a question. But there's a lack of organization. There's a lack of communication between these different groups. I mean, it's kind of like, to use, you know, a military metaphor, it's like you're fighting a battle on a front and the commanders of different battalions and army groups don't have radio frequencies to talk to each other. You know, it doesn't matter how good your ideas are or what your strategy is. It's if you're disorganized, that's a major hindrance to you militarily. And likewise, politics, we have this fundamental breakdown of being able to have an umbrella party to be able to have all the nationalist movement be able to come together and fight and work together to maximize our effectiveness. So the party is a culmination of you know, a lot of work from a lot of different people to be able to be a European-style grassroots political movement, to be able to organize and mobilize the nationalist scene, but then also be organized to work on recruitment. Because I feel like one problem in the American nationalist scene is, you know, different groups fight over different pieces of pie, you know, when it comes to members and things like that. But our perspective of the party is we're going to bake more pie. Because in the age of Donald Trump and identity politics, there's this huge vacuum where there's millions of white Americans that are looking for answers, that are looking to get involved politically, and they hate the establishment system. So our main mission through the party then is to strengthen the nationalist scene, but then to bring it to the people in our communities and to grow it. And I believe we'll be very successful with it.
Very good. Yeah, and I'm looking at the Traditionalist Worker Party website right now. It's tradworker.org. And we will have this linked up when we post this podcast program. And let me just read just a brief section here. It says, local solutions to the globalist problem. And it says, the Traditionalist Worker Party is America's first political party created by and for working families. Our mission is defending faith, family, and folk against the politicians and oligarchs who are running America into the ground. We intend to achieve that goal by building a nationwide network of grassroots local leaders who will lead Americans toward a peaceful and prosperous future free from economic exploitation, federal tyranny, and anti-Christian degeneracy. Now, could you maybe just elaborate a little bit on the platform of the Tradworker Party? What are some of the main issues that the party is concerned with? Yeah.
Probably the number one is, of course, we are economic third positionists. And, you know, what that means is we're neither capitalist or communist, but we're economic nationalists, where we put the people in the nation first. You know, where capitalism is class warfare of the top against the bottom, and communism is class warfare of the bottom against the top. We believe for a nation to be strong, we need to have class cooperation, not class warfare. So that's where our party actually is the first American party that is economic third positionists, which is very common in Europe. Groups like Forza Nova, the NPD, Golden Dawn, that many of your listeners are familiar with. But we're the first Americans to be able to kind of take up that mantle and really break from the capitalist communist, two-party system, where in my mind, if you break down the human experience into money and class, that's two sides of the same coin, that I believe that the economy is here to be able to serve the people and the nation. And we shouldn't be picking either a dictatorship of the workers or a dictatorship of the oligarchs. We need to be able to have a strong national family that is able to put our people first. The next big issue is finding ways to be able to give a voice to white working and middle class families who politically have just been ignored. They've been taken advantage of by the Republicans and the Democrats. And everything from issues like affirmative action to mass legal and illegal immigration from the third world that's changing the demographics of our country, to when it comes to discriminatory policies and also discriminatory images in the media against whites. That there's an entire institutionalized structure that is built in to beat down white working and middle class families economically and socially. So one of our big objectives is going to be able to fight that and to organize and mobilize our communities to be able to stand up for themselves. Because right now we're just individuals, we're families, we're groups of friends, but we need to be able to turn ourselves into a movement. And it's movements that are able to accomplish real things with real political power. Right. Another issue is going to be fighting when it comes to elections. Now, we're not going to go out and expect to win our first go-around, but where you think where we can be politically viable. For instance, an example can be in Hungary, where Viktor Orban, the prime minister, his party, the Conservative Party, has been steadily pushed to the right by Jobbik, the nationalist party there. And the reason is they were losing elections to Jobbik over and over again. So the conservatives were forced to adopt nationalist policies so they could continue to win elections. And, Jobbik was able to use pain, the carrot and the stick, to be able to push the conservatives to the right. And likewise, in many of these swing districts in the United States, if we've got candidates who are Republicans who are weak on immigration, who are weak on gun rights, who are weak on issues like pro-life, and we could run a candidate and even win 2 or 3% and cause that incumbent to lose, then that's a decision where we can have a disproportionate impact on American politics to say to the Republicans, you know, either you're going to run candidates that are stronger on the nationalist issues we care about, or we'll keep running candidates and we'll cause you to lose. So the Republicans, even just out of fear and pain, we can push to shift to the right on nationalist issues. So it's fighting smarter, not harder. So that's kind of just a brief overview of some of the things we're working on. And of course, we're also working to support homeschooling families by having a nationalist curriculum drawn up. We support our members getting involved in local farmers markets, to hold monthly meetings, and to really try and build this state within a state where our party will build and we'll be able to take care of each other and advocate for each other.
Very good. Now, I know you have traveled to Europe and sort of consulted with and collaborated with nationalist parties over there, including the Golden Dawn, and I believe also a nationalist party in Germany. And I'm curious, yes. What are some of the lessons that you've learned from these European nationalist parties?
Well, the biggest thing is this that I've learned from the Europeans is in our perspective, we need to be able to create, like I said, the idea of the party being something that is part of your life. It's an all-encompassing thing where, you know, where the party helps take care of members of the community who are in need. The party is the way you identify, you know, where running candidates is just part of it, but it's this entire subculture. And we really need to build that, because in American politics, you know, you pick team R or team D, and then it's just like, you know, fans who show up for the playoffs and wave their banners, and then they go back to sleep until the next season. American politics is kind of like that, and we need to be able to create a political force that is agitating every single day for the best interests of our constituents. Like Golden Dawn is a great example, you know, where Golden Dawn spends almost all of their time and money helping needy Greeks, whether it's feeding Greeks, getting job training for Greeks, you know, supporting local businesses, encouraging their members to start businesses to be able to create jobs. It becomes this entire network where if you are part of that structure, the party will work to take care of you, and you'll work to take care of your neighbors and your fellow comrades. So it's this entirely different perspective on how a party is supposed to run. But, you know, you look at Golden Dawn's growth, they've proven that this is a working model, that the people learn to trust you more than the other parties that just care about their votes. We care about the people. We're going to put the people first. And that's a huge break from establishment politics as it is. I mean, you know, where that's how I kind of see it's more important for our party members to be able to, you know, if there's a widow or a grandmother, to be able to shovel her driveway or rake her leaves, or you know, walk an old person to the bank so they can be able to withdraw their Social Security without fear of getting robbed or mugged on the way. That's far more important than just giving a stump speech and trying to win people over to vote for you one time. We need to build lasting relationships in our communities and change people's lives for the better. And Golden Dawn has done that. I mean, you've got people that were former Communist Party members and socialists who I met when I was over in Greece, who, because Golden Dawn helped them and invested in them and viewed them as part of their extended family, now they're dedicated nationalists, and they converted people by winning their hearts and their minds. So that's the biggest thing I see in America. We need to start winning some hearts and minds of our people and really putting our people first. We don't want their support just for, you know, for November. We just don't want their support so they can send us a donation. We want their support because we want our political movement to make their lives and the lives of their children better.
So this really does, the movement you're hoping to create, this really does transcend politics. It's much bigger than that.
Yeah, it's working to have an entire societal structure where, I mean, if you look as an example in, I mean, really in any nationalist movement, you know, in Lebanon, Hezbollah, of course, you know, the Lebanese state was an absolute mess for many years. And Hezbollah started opening schools. They started getting doctors. They started potholes. They started getting food to hungry Lebanese, and they won the support within their community. They were able to provide the services because they cared about their people better than the state could, and people give them their support. You know, and that's just an example of one group in one country. But likewise, if you just look at the millions of white Americans who have been abandoned. I mean, Appalachia is the poorest part of America, with generational poverty, life expectancies that in some places is a decade shorter than areas in Washington, D.C., where the establishment politicians live. And we're talking about people who are in a great need, who have been abandoned economically, politically, and socially. So if we can get into these communities where these people need help, and they don't need a hand out, they need a hand up. And that's kind of the idea of the party. We love our people and believe in them and want to give them that hand up to help make their lives better. And we're going to transcend petty, you know, party politics. When we go into an area, we want to be boots on the ground, invested, that these people know we're not, after November, just going to pick up and go away, that we're in here for the long haul to be able to revolutionize their communities and the lives of their fellow citizens. So that's a really European idea, and that's what we're looking to build.
Now, how many candidates will be standing for election in 2016?
So we're looking to get off to a you know, a slow and steady start. So we're going to be having one candidate run just in 2016. But the main thing that we're focusing on is building our ground game. We want to be able to, in the areas where we have local chapters, And we've got chapters in three different regions of Kentucky, in Pennsylvania, in California. We're going to be holding a big rally in California in May, which is going to be great. On the state house steps is the plan right now. To be able to build this ground game. So as we unite the nationalist cause, we find people that want to run for office that are well known in their communities. And then that's where the plan is. So for the midterm elections, to be able to roll out a full slate of candidates, which, after we've built that ground game, I think we're going to be more invested in the communities than the Republicans and the Democrats are, because we're really going to put our efforts into being a part of the community and not just being parasites on the community like Republicans and Democrats. Seem to be in every single area.
Now, there is an upcoming conference. The Traditionalist Workers' Party conference is going to be taking place on Saturday, February 13th in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Can you give us any details about the conference and maybe talk about some of the speakers that will be there?
Sure. Well, we're really excited because we're bringing together folks from our Mid-Atlantic region to be able to come together and talk about plans for activism, for how we're going to be able to have all these different groups come together, and what our plans are, and then how we're going to put those plans into action. We've got a huge range of speakers, which is going to be great, including Dr. Raphael Johnson, who is known by many as the Orthodox Nationalist. A former professor, author of nearly a dozen books, and formerly worked for American Free Press as well, back during the classic Willis Cardo days. And he's going to be speaking about who we are and where we're going. So we've got, a professor, a very well-read man, and a very good friend of mine who's going to give a great talk. I'm going to be speaking as well, kind of about the party. And how we're different and what we're going to do. We're going to have some live folk music performed, which is going to be great. A friend of mine, Patty, who is also our Mid-Atlantic regional coordinator, is an amazing folk musician. So he's going to be performing live for us, which is going to be very exciting. And my good friend, John Friend, is going to be speaking as well. So
yes, American Free Press will be there to cover the event. I will be there, and yes, I will be speaking. And I'm very excited myself. I think this will be a great opportunity to meet new people and to network and to really take this to the next level. If anybody's interested in going, how can they find out? How can they get more details, or what would be the best way to go about learning more about the conference and actually attending it?
Sure. Well, one thing is for anyone who can't make it to Pennsylvania, we will be recording our speakers and have that available online. So fear not, you get to be there at least in spirit. But for folks who want to be able to come, we believe it is very important, especially in this early building phase, to protect the identities of our members and our supporters to be able to, as we're building this infrastructure. So, soon we're going to just be having totally open public meetings where, bam, we put it on the internet exactly where we're going to be. But for now, we're in this building process. So anyone who's interested can go to tradworker.org and send us an email on the contact and get in touch with us so we can give you the details. Our plan so far is we're going to have a meeting spot in Harrisburg and then take everyone to the conference. And it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to be doing it from 1 to 5. And then afterward, we're all going to go out and get some food, have lots of fellowship. It's going to be a full day event that you don't want to miss. So just head over for anyone who wants to come to tradworker.org. Send us an email. It's contact@tradworker.org. Easy to remember. And send me an email and we'll get you in touch with the meeting location. And then we'll have a great time on the 13th.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for taking the time today, Matt. I look forward to meeting you next week. And, having just a great conference. I'm very excited.
Looking forward to it, John. I'll see you soon.
Okay, thanks.